The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Welcome back. Now, funnily enough, we're staying in the same territory here now because we mentioned The Sopranos yesterday. We're going to talk a little bit about the Sopranos now, and I think Tony Soprano would probably have done with a bit of Maureen Gaffney. So, first up, our culture panel are joining us. So freelance pop culture journalist Jen Gannon and producer and director Brian Redden are here. Guys, you're both very welcome.
Thank you.
But I am also joined on the line now first to talk about The Sopranos by author and superfan Henrietta McCurvey. Hi, Henrietta.
Hi, how are you?
So, look, Henrietta, the prequel film of The Sopranos, The Many Saints of Newark, is coming out, I think, next Wednesday, weirdly. It's coming into the cinemas. But look, The Sopranos, generally regarded as probably one of the greatest TV shows of all time, often kind of credited, I suppose, with kicking off this golden age of quality television we live in. For anyone who hasn't seen it, this is a very hard question now. What's it about?
Yeah, that is a big question. And it was funny, I was listening to Maureen Gaffney and thinking, oh, The Sopranos and the family dynamics as they're enacted out. She would have been all over that. it's a HBO TV series which ran for 6 seasons, January 99, I think the pilot was broadcast, to 2007. And it's essentially a series about family, but it's two families. So mob boss Tony Soprano has his domestic family, his wife, his very, very difficult mother, his children, and he also has his New Jersey gangster family and their on-again, off-again war with their New York equivalents. And the show basically plots both of those things in each episode. You know, each episode manages to cover both some of what's happening with his domestic family and also this mob boss family and their war.
And then another impossible question, really, but what was so great about it?
Well, I mean, there's loads of things that are great about it. But there was the character of Tony, played by James Gandolfini, and it's his son Michael, who's playing Tony now in The Many Saints of Newark. He's an incredibly compelling character. The mob, sort of mob movies before that, they were slightly Frankensteinish, or they were goon henchmen. It was all a bit, you know, even when they were subtly done, it still wasn't as subtly as exploring what's happening within his family as well. Mm-hmm. So the tensions of those two things, which are brilliantly done in Tony, and it manipulates the viewer so well that you end up completely rooting for him. I mean, he kills 8 people alone himself in the series, but you're still sitting there hoping he's going to be okay. The way it manipulates the viewer to him, I think, is one thing. But there's also other things that were unusual about it for the time. The production, the use of music in the production was something that wasn't really done to that extent. And that, again, you see in influenced shows since. They killed off a very main character, like about halfway through, the Adriana. And that, again, wasn't done. Series never killed off main characters before that. And whereas now it happens all the time. So I think it has a massive influence, which you can see now in that last year GQ magazine called The Sopranos the best series of 2020. So it's being rediscovered over and over by people simply because the themes and the structure of it is so good.
Yeah, and of course, underlying it all was this kind of almost Shakespearean exploration of Tony's psyche through he starts going to therapy. So in the first season, I think he has a panic attack, so he reluctantly goes to therapy with Dr. Melfi. We have a little clip here. This is one of their first encounters.
Let me tell you something. Nowadays, everybody's got to go to shrinks and counselors and go on Sally, Jesse, Raphael and talk about their problems. Whatever happened to Gary Cooper, the strong, silent type? That was an American. He wasn't in touch with his feelings. He just did what he had to do. See, what they didn't know was once they got Gary Cooper in touch with his feelings, that they wouldn't be able to shut him up. And then it's dysfunction this, and dysfunction that, and dysfunction my fungal.
You have strong feelings about this.
I had a semester and a half of college, so I understand Freud. I understand therapy as a concept. But in my world, it does not go down.
Okay, that's Tony at therapy.
Yeah, I love that. I have a semester and a half of college.
So. Yeah, yeah. And I think what we see in The Many Saints of Newark is that the young Tony, that his life plan was to go to college and get out of the family business and, you know, that old chestnut. But obviously he got sucked in. The other great character in it is Carmela, the wife, who manages to, like, she's drawn into the moral maze the same as the rest of us, but she kind of held herself above it all in a way, Henrietta, didn't she, while enjoying the life?
Yes, and I think, interestingly enough, Carmela becomes a more compromised character than Tony. And there's David Simon once described his Baltimore crime, you know, the series The Wire, which was just 3 years after The Sopranos, as being about the search for meaningful work in America today. And I think The Sopranos itself is about the search for meaning, which is, you know, that's where Tony ends up in psychoanalysis. And Carmela searches for meaning through religion. That's where she's looking mm-hmm. for forgiveness and doesn't get it, obviously. And when she goes to a therapist, she is very, very clearly told, you leave Tony and you take nothing but your children. And she doesn't do it. And the therapist that she sees says to her, one thing you can never say is that you haven't been told. Yeah. So we see her completely just buying in with the life, having at the start when we meet her first, feeling like she's more compromised and an unwilling participant. We actually see her very clearly deciding to stick with the life. Whereas Tony's is a slightly more nuanced journey throughout.
And so the clip we have here now, this is Carmela did at one point ask for a divorce, and Tony gives her a few home truths.
I have asked you to lunch to tell you that I'm filing for divorce.
Well, first of all, we're Italian. We don't believe in divorce. We believe in the nuclear family.
I have an attorney who is going to aggressively pursue an equitable distribution of our assets.
Our assets? The only reason you have anything is because of my fucking sweat. And you know every step of the way exactly how it works. But you walk around that fucking mansion, your $500 shoes and your diamond rings, and you act like butter wouldn't melt in your mouth.
I want what I am entitled to.
You're entitled to shit.
Okay, so that's Carmela. It does pretty much, that sums up her whole attitude to everything.
Yeah.
Brian and Jen, were you either of you big Sopranos fans?
Yeah, I'm worried, concerned about the fate of the many saints of Newark. I don't think we should expect anything miraculous from these saints, to be honest. And I'm really worried about Michael Gandolfini, because I think it's a really harsh thing to do, to step in to the shoes of your father.
He really wanted to do it.
The expectations are so high, sky high. And I just think the critical reception and the fans' reception, I think, I don't know if fans, as much as they love The Sopranos, want to see Tony Soprano, The Wonder Years. I don't know. And like, that's what it looks like to me. And you can see Vera Farmiga, like, she looks great as Olivia Soprano. She looks really good in the trailer. But I would proceed with caution for this one, I think.
Yeah, okay. Henrietta, Olivia Soprano, the mother. And again, we're back to Maureen Gaffney here now. She was probably one of the great characters in modern television. I don't know how we would characterize the attachment there, but explain her and that relationship she had with Tony, which was bizarre.
It was, and they have this really toxic, twisted relationship. I mean, at one point, she orders a hit on her son.
Yeah.
And then denies it, claiming to be sort of feeble-minded.
I'm just an old lady, Robin Einhorst, I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what? I didn't do what? Me?
Yeah.
You know, but we can completely see. I mean, Nancy Martin is amazing in the part. She's fantastic. But they have this very, very twisted relationship. And slightly in the same way as Carmela, sort of pretending she didn't really know what was going on with her husband, who was, you know, Tony in a previous life. Whereas she obviously really did. And in fact, quite powerful behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. And okay, so another little clip here. This is gold. This is her response when AJ, the grandson, tells her that Tony has started going to therapy.
A psychiatrist? But that's crazy. That's all nonsense. What does he need a psychiatrist for?
He goes to talk about his mother. He talks about me. He complains. She didn't do this. She did that? Yeah. Oh, I gave my life to my children on a silver platter. And this is how he repays me.
Yeah, we absolutely need Maureen Gaffney back in the studio. Like, there is more in there than there is in 10 psychology books. Henrietta, am I right in thinking that the story arc with Tony and his mother didn't end as intended. It had to be truncated.
That's right, because the actor died. Yeah. Unexpectedly. So I think the intention had been to run that plot line further, because the plot line in which she had tried to organise a hit on him and then was pretending she didn't know anything about it, that was really just getting going and it could have gone somewhere else entirely. So it would have been really interesting to see how far they would have pushed the toxicity of that relationship if she had lived.
And listen, just finally, we need to talk about the ending, which I watched again the other night. I'm watching it again. It is such an incredible scene. But just explain to people in a nutshell how it ended and what the controversy around it was.
Yes, so there has been the war between New Jersey and New York has completely escalated. People are getting killed left, right and centre. And in the very last scene, Tony is meeting his family, so Carmela and their children, in a diner, very classic American diner. The episode is called Made in America, which I think is very interesting because in the very first episode, he talks about the American dream being over, that the best is over and you can't come in at the ground floor anymore. And in the very last scene, it goes to black. We can either read it as Tony has just been shot, there's been a man suspiciously walking around, shot, and so from Tony's perspective, everything is over, is the, generally the reading of it, or some people also think of it as pop culture's greatest cop-out because it's unresolved, but I must say I'm with the former. I think he's over.
I went into a wormhole then reading about it, and apparently yeah. Tony had said to somebody quite recently before that, he had talked about how there are only two ways out for a boss, jail or getting whacked. And he talked about getting whacked and he said, you probably don't even hear it. You probably don't even know it's coming. So that might explain the fade to black. All right, listen, Henrietta McCarvey, thank you very much. And your latest novel, Henrietta, A Talented Man, is in all good bookshops now. Thanks, Henrietta.
Okay, thank you.
Brian, were you a soprano? You strike me as the quintessential soprano.
I love that last
you're
scene.
You're practically the Tony Soprano of movie reviewing yourself.
I think that's a very high compliment. Yeah, that final scene in Sopranos is superb. And I mean, he probably didn't hear it come on because he was reinventing the career of Don't Stop Believing, that single that was playing, which he puts on in the background. It was that moment, the tension in that scene. A guy walks in, you don't know who he is. It's all close-ups, it's hands, it's feet, it's looks. You don't know if he's going to get whacked or not. Beautifully done.
And everyone who moves out of the corner of the screen in the restaurant,
he's going to get whacked.
He looks up to the door every time.
But I think it's interesting. Actually about the film is David Chase, who created The Sopranos and also is behind the film, is furious at the moment because the film, as you say, it's out in cinemas on Wednesday, but it's also been streamed on HBO Max. He didn't know that and he's absolutely furious about that.
Because all he's wanted all his life is to make a movie.
He's saying, like, you know, we have struggled really hard to get away from television to make this very cinematic and now it's going back on television and I don't want it back on HBO. So he's telling people not to stream it, to go out and see it in the cinema.
But it is strange because The Sopranos did usher in the golden age of television, that Mad Men, and you know, it's come full circle. So they legitimised TV in a way, and now it's like they always wanted to go for movies, but TV is actually the place where it's actually the most cinematic at the moment. He helped create that.
So the whole thing has kind of eaten itself. Yeah. It's eaten its own tail at this stage in some way. Okay, but listen, much more important than that, Jen, Bake Off is back.
Bake Off is back, yes. The nights are drawing in, and the best cosy telly is back. You had Strictly is back last night, Gogglebox is back, and the third season and a Drag Race UK is starting this week coming as well. So I love all these autumn staples because you cannot live on complex prestige dramas alone. You need this comfort TV, and there's nothing more comforting than Bake Off. I'm really still unsure about Matt Lucas as a presenter in that role, in the Sandy role. I always say I wish they asked Kathy Burke. I think she would have been perfect, but at least we still have Noel Fielding, and Noel Fielding's voice to me is my own ASMR. I find him just talking about lemon drizzle cake and sticky toffee pudding. It's like it's some kind of, I don't know, Xanax. It just puts me in this relaxing trance, and that's what Bake Off is. It's televisual Xanax. It's, you know, confectionery meditation for people.
Okay, and look, them that like it, and it, for the rest of the people, the world will go on anyway.
Exactly.
But it's there on Channel 4 on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Now, Brian, speaking of the streaming movies issue, Clint Eastwood probably not thrilled that Cry Macho is coming out and streaming either,
he's got mixed feelings about it. Yeah, so Cry Machos, again, it's HBO Max. So Warner Brothers have a deal with HBO. So everything that Warner Brothers brings out in the cinemas now, they're streaming simultaneously on HBO Max. And Eastwood's latest film, Cry Macho, which I've seen and it's really good. He's not overly happy about it because he's old school. You know, he wants stuff to be in the cinemas. He wants people to go and see it on the big screen. So he's not overly, you know, enamored with the fact that you can stream and watch this. So I have to apologise to him if I ever see him that I did actually watch it. No, I didn't go to the cinema to watch it. I streamed it. So it's really good. So Eastwood now is 91 years of age. 91, he's still making movies. He made this when he was 90 last year. And it's a story that's been kicking around since the 70s. Interestingly, Eastwood looked at it in the 70s with a view to directing it because he thought he was too old to play the lead in it. And it's the story of an ageing ex-rodeo star who was a very big rodeo star, got out of the business after an accident. And
Played by
Clint Eastwood.
Oh, so he was too old to play it 20 years ago, but he felt
he was too young to play it.
Back in the 70s.
And he wanted to grow into the part.
So
in fact, actually, back in the 70s, he actually suggested directing it and Robert Mitchum playing the lead, which would have been kind of interesting. But now he feels he's old enough to play the part. So he's his ex-rodeo star. He's had an accident. He's hit the bottle. So it's the kind of character that Eastwood plays very well.
Yeah.
You know, he's old. He's grizzled. He has issues. He gets fired from a job. He still has a job at 90. This is the one problem with the film, I think.
And a driving license. I hope he got the eyes tested and got the license for another one.
But Annie punches people out. And there's a kind of a love interest in it. So, you know, and Eastwood does look 90 on screen. So he's probably too old to play the part. But nonetheless, he is very good. When he is good, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
So his boss hires him to go back to Mexico to get his son who's in Mexico. And he's fallen in with a group of bad people. And he wants to bring him back to the United States. And, of course, the young Mexican fella hates Eastwood. Eastwood doesn't like him. And they bond on the trip.
We've seen versions. So it's Bake Off for people who like Clint Eastwood.
It's Bake Off, basically, for people. Okay. But that's what it is. Eastwood is always reliable. You know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, so it is the equivalent of Bake Off. It's good. It's warm. It's heartwarming. There's moments in it you'll really adore. It won't change your life. But I really enjoyed it, I have to say.
Okay. Now, lots of documentaries around. Will we start, Jen, with Look Away, which I actually I had watched anyway before you recommended it. Like, not the best made documentary, but I think what's in it
just to get the stories out there, I think it's really important. It's on tonight on Sky Documentaries, so Now TV.
You can get it anytime you want on Now TV.
But it's really just, it focuses on the story of these young girls, well, children, who were, you know, into the seductive nature of rock and roll in the 70s and 80s. And the music industry has never had a reckoning like the Me Too movement in Hollywood, because it can't, because it's actually insidious. I mean, you might have a Leave in Neverland or an R. Kelly documentary once in a while, but like, I don't know if it makes a substantial bit of difference or, you know, makes a dent in any of the money that Michael Jackson would make from, you know, his back catalogue or Kelly himself, you know. But I think, as any woman who loves music will tell you, you have to have, there's a certain amount of cognitive dissonance that you have to come to when you're listening to music, or else 90% of the bands and artists you listen to, you could never listen to again because of what they did. And this is about that. This is about, you know, I don't know if men care as much as women do about what these rock gods did back in the 70s and 80s and even now. So they have interviews with groupies, in inverted commas, like Laurie Maddox, who was 13 years old when she was hanging around with Jimmy Page and Iggy Pop at Rodney Bingenheimer's English Disco, who was a frankly disturbing DJ in the mould of Jimmy Savile, I would say, who let a number of young besotted children run around his nightclub and had rock and roll groups come in and just take their pick of these children.
And as one of the women says in it, like, every band who came to town went to hang out here. Why did they?
And they were obsessed with young children. I could give you any band right now that you love, and I could give you a song that was disturbingly written about a child. Bowie's Let Me Sleep Beside You, Iggy's Look Away, as you know, the title of the film, and The Stones' Stray Cat Blues, Alec Chilton's Little Child, all disturbing songs. They moved on. Then they had these girls and then moved on to these acceptable relationships later on, and these stories were buried. So it's the first time people are telling their stories. Julia Holcomb is telling her story about Steven Tyler.
Yeah. It's worth watching for
She was 16 years old. He was 26 years old. And
he was made her legal ward, handed over by the mother, and the whole story plays out. It's
But just to say, the R. Kelly trial is happening right now. These things are still happening and there needs to be something.
Okay. So look, it's really important to watch it. Yeah. Okay. And that's Look Away, and that's on Sky Documentaries or Now TV. Brian, we'll take one more documentary. Tell us about Bob Ross. Now, I know a lot of people are into him. I think he's on, his shows are being shown on BBC4. Yeah, I wouldn't be familiar with him.
No, nor was I have to say. But yeah, he is, you can see him on BBC4. But he was huge in America. So basically, he's the American equivalent of Tony Hart. So he was this kind of benevolent artist who had a show called The Joy of Painting. And what he'd be on American television, obviously, and he'd be showing people how to paint, basically. And he would paint landscapes, mostly landscapes, actually. But he was this kind of really charming character, your favourite uncle. He had kind of frizzy perm and he was always smiling. And the documentary is called Bob Ross, Happy Accidents, Betrayal and Greed. And it's called Happy Accidents because he didn't believe anyone ever made a mistake in when you were painting. It was a happy accident.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, so that's the kind of character you're talking about. So this lovely, beautiful, charming, fascinating man, everybody in America loves him. What could possibly, you know, why would you make a documentary about him? Well, what was really interesting was he was manipulated by a couple called the Kowalskis. Now, they're not in this documentary, so they kind of shied away from it. But the documentary is made by his son, because his son was left with nothing after Bob Ross died. Bob Ross died, and he left behind a multi-million dollar empire. His son claims that he signed away the rights to his image on his deathbed to this unscrupulous couple. Now, we don't know if that's true or not, because the couple aren't in the documentary to defend themselves. But the son claims that he did sign his life away, and he was cajoled into doing it, his image away. So now Bob Ross's face is on mugs and t-shirts and paintbrushes, and it's a multi-million dollar industry, and his son has got diddly. So this documentary is about a son trying to come to terms with his father's legacy and how he's been screwed out of it, basically.
Okay, so even if you've no idea about Bob Ross, good watch.
And it's a good watch.
It's on Netflix. It's up already.
It's up on Netflix now, but it's really interesting about how the art world works and how you place worth on things in the art world. It's really, really interesting. Yeah. If you don't know who the guy is, it doesn't matter.
Okay, great.
It's a great, great story.
Great, okay. Jen, never mind, do we need a Sopranos prequel? Do we need Never Mind the Buzzcocks back on Sky Max on Tuesday at 9 p.m?
I didn't think we did. I didn't, because I usually hate when they bring shows back. And I think Buzzcocks really struggled because after, especially when Simon Amstel left the BBC One, he made it a Central Viewing. And then they kind of limped on with Rod Gilbert, the comedian. But they've given it a bit of a spruce up. And I'm enjoying the people that they've got involved. So the host is now going to be Greg Davies, who's, if anybody knows him, from Taskmaster, which is back this week as well. He has this very slightly demented, aggressive quality to him, which I think that's what the host needs for Buzzcocks. You've got Noel Fielding. It's a bumper week for Noel Fielding fans. He's still going to be team captain. But then on the other side of the team captain, you've got Daisy May Cooper, who I think is a brilliant comedian. And she's really deadpan, but she also has this very much relatability to her. So she'll be like she'll cut through all the madness. And it's been given a kind of younger, fresher spruce up. And I think it will be always fun to watch. For panel shows, it was one of the best ones, I think.
Okay, Brian, do you want to talk to us about Foundation, or do you want to recommend your James Bond movie on TV? Well, we can talk about Foundation and just mention that the James Bond is on.
Foundation, I mean, Apple TV are putting a lot of promotion into this. Everywhere you look, there's ads and ads and ads everywhere. So it starts on September 24th. A lot of expectations, high expectations for this series. It's based on a series of novels written by Isaac Asimov, the science fiction writer. Now, some of his stuff on the screen hasn't really worked. Actually, it hasn't been very much, but the two movies I can think of are Bicentennial Man and I, Robot, both of which were terrible. So it'd be interesting to see if this is going to work. But this is big budget. It's basically Game of Thrones in space. So it's about the Galactic Empire has fallen and all these guys get together to try and create a new world. So that's
all these things are about the same thing.
They're all pretty much everything's a Western at the end of the day. Or it's a story of what's the classic theme? It's a man who leaves a castle, a hero goes on a journey and he has to find something. In this case, what they're trying to find is a new world, and it's the Foundations, a group of people brought together to try and create a new world. What's interesting from our point of view, from an Irish point of view, is that most of it was shot down in Limerick in Troy Studios, which is going to be really interesting to see. And Jared Harris plays the lead in it. And it was nice to have Harris back in Limerick, where his dad was from. So there's lots of location shooting in it as well. But I think a good chunk of it was shot down in Limerick. And a lot of Irish people.
So look, worth a try anyway, for people who like that kind of thing. And that's up on Apple TV on September 24th. 24th.
September 24th.
Friday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jen, finally, there's something similar on Disney Plus, The Last Man.
Yeah, why The Last Man? That's on Wednesday. And
okay.
It's based
really
on
quickly.
Just a comic book series. And it's one of those dystopian action, you know, series. But it ruminates on the concept of just gender and identity, which is, you know, big hot button topics at the moment. So,
okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's
kind of
like anybody
good,
with a Y
good.
Chromosome is gone, basically.
They've okay.
been eradicated from the planet, except for one man and his monkey. So
okay,
make
sure,
of that what you will.
Look, sure, some will say that's the way it's going anyway. All right, Brian Redden and Jen Gannon, thank you very much. I have to take another quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.